Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to this week's Living Torah. And before I get into anything, I want to, first of all, to our partners. I know that the quality of our CDs in the last couple of months has been, as one person said, miserable. If you've been watching for a while, you know that Kathy's was out of town a number of times during this last few months, and with the passing away of her father, you know, it was just really becoming a miracle just to have things get out of this office. And our shipping was delayed and various things. The quality of our CDs, there was just nothing I could do about it. So we're trying to do everything we can now that we're past that season of life to make it up to you. And this month, our CDs to our partners, and there's information on our website about that. You know, you watch this video on a weekly basis, and it's free to you, but it's not free to us. And it's free because people are paying for it. People actually give to this ministry, make this ministry possible through this. And so in this month, December, we have two CDs which will be available through that. And that will be my interview with God's Learning Channel with Tommy and Al. And I know that many people tried to listen on the internet, tried to watch, and it's, you know, it was buffering for a number of different reasons. It's the internet, folks. It's technology. And as much of a blessing as it can be at times, it can be a nightmare at other times. So we understand all these things as, you know, we try to work through this technology. And on this side of the millennium, it's just not perfect. And on the other side, in the millennium, I doubt we're going to be using it. We're going to have something much different. So that's another subject. So again, my apologies, and we're doing everything we can right now. The season is past, and so we're back on schedule. Things are going out in a timely fashion. By the way, Torah's Life Volume 3, if you were out of town for Thanksgiving, didn't get a chance to watch last week, the Torah's Life Volume 3, I will make you live in tents, which is the words of Hosea that are actually in this Haftorah portion this week. That's available through the website. It's in. It is being shipped even as I speak. Kathy is on her way to the post office to put the first ones in the mail to you. A couple things going on in the news. Of course, this, if you're watching the news at all this week, you're going to see inundated with, I'm watching even on my computer over here to the right, my right, Tiger Woods and the accusations, the transgressions, various things that are coming against him. You know, folks, this is tragic. And what's even more tragic is what the media is going to make it out to be. Tiger Woods has stayed pretty squeaky clean through the years. And I think all of us really were admiring him for that and just wanting one of these sports stars to make it through this this life in the stardom that they have and the riches and everything else. It just proves to us once again that riches do not buy happiness. You know, there's only one way to a completely fulfilled life, and that is through our faith in Messiah, and that faith that brings us to a new way of life in the Torah. And as I said a couple weeks ago, you know, we look at things like this that are happening around us, we shouldn't be pointing fingers, and the media is just going to make this thing into a circus. I feel for Tiger and for his wife specifically. Of course, his children are a little bit too young to understand what's going on, but they still understand there's problems. And so maybe through this whole thing, Tiger will actually find that golf is not the answer in the end. The answer is a relationship with your Creator. Now, in the news, of course, we've got Copenhagen coming up, and that is going to be a mess, folks. Keep up with that thing. It's going to be happening in the coming week. This is basically a selling out of everything. It is the agenda of the one world, the new world order. And we're going to be seeing in this coming week, we need to be watching what's going on. Not that we need to be praying against it. I don't believe that. We need to be asking the Father to show us what is going on behind the scenes, because it's not being reported. Take, for instance, this person, this man who walked into a restaurant and killed four police officers in cold blood, and then was killed in Seattle. Well, you know, the media doesn't say a whole lot about it, but he had Islamic ties. Surprise, surprise. Once again, we see Islam coming up into this. You know, and again, here's, you know, Mike Huckabee is in the news of commuting this guy's sentence. Well, you know, I think that the grace that Mike talks about, that Mayor Huckabee talks about, that grace that is in the scriptures that he teaches, because as far as I know, his life has nothing to do with the words of the Torah. He's basically a quote-unquote New Testament Christian. And so that caused maybe him to see things in some ways that they shouldn't have been. Basically, the man should have never been out on the streets again. But the fact that he is a Muslim. And everywhere we look, we see this thing of Islam that is rearing its head in this day. We see it with Iran. We see it with the continuation of the talks of splitting Israel right down the middle. I've got a map right here over my left-hand shoulder, my left shoulder, and you know, this is the agenda that's going to happen in these days. We need to be praying not against these things, but asking, Father, how can we be a light in the midst of it? Well, this week we're going to be in Genesis chapter 32, verse 4, through chapter 36, verse 43, also the Haftorah reading, Hosea chapter 11, verse 7, through chapter 12, verse 12, Obadiah, verses 1 through 21, Joshua chapter 22, 23, and 24. We will end the book of Joshua this week. Well, we open the Torah this week with the infamous meeting of Jacob and his brother Esau. It's been a long journey for him. It's been over 14 years now since he has left that infamous place in the hills of Ephraim. And he has gone out basically he needs to find out who Jacob is. And he needs to find out if the one who is referred to as the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac will indeed be the one that he serves. And it is through the trials, the tribulations, that he comes back. He's on his journey back. He has said goodbye for the last time to Laban. And though we will find this week that some things of Laban's household he would still have to deal with as before he could cross back into the full promises, into the land called Israel. But we see that this meeting between him and Esau, and we'll pick it up in Genesis chapter 32, and let's go down to verse 9 is where I'm going to start reading. It says, if Esau comes to find one camp and attacks it, at least the camp that is left will escape. Then Jacob said, God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, Adonai, you told me, return to your country and to your kinsmen, and I will do you good. If I'm not worthy of all the love and faithfulness that you have shown your servant since I crossed the Arden with only my staff. But now I have become two camps of people. Please rescue me from my brother Esau. I'm afraid of him. Afraid he'll come back and attack me without regard for my mother, for mothers or children. You said, I will certainly do you good and make your descendants as numerous as the grains of sand by the sea, which are so many that they cannot be counted. In this, we see that Jacob is at that place now of what we talked about last week, of a crisis of faith. He is coming to the place that even though he is still kind of manipulating the situation a little bit and saying, okay, I need to, you know, make my family into two camps. That way, if Esau attacks one, maybe the other one is going to be able to escape. And whether that was the right thing to do or not, we're not here to judge that one. I do see it as very prophetic in light of the scriptures of Ezekiel chapter 37 and the restoration of the two kingdoms that we see that will come together in the end. In the end of Genesis and in the end of time also. But whether this is the right thing to do or not, that's, in my opinion right now, is immaterial. What is relevant to us is that Jacob is coming to the place that it's no longer going to be the Elohim of my grandfather and of my father. We are in that situation that the Almighty has brought this man to a place that he is going to have to make a decision. I think that this is a spot that we need to, parents, those of you that are parents that are watching me, we need to allow the Father to bring our children to the place of a meeting, just like there was with Esau. We are too willing to prop them up time and time again. We are too willing to step in there and continue to make the decisions for them instead of allowing them the time to go through with Laban. That whole 14-year time period with Laban, you know, Jacob's looking at Laban, but in the back of his mind, he's thinking Esau. And he's seeing, you know, Laban is a difficult person to deal with, but he knows before he gets back to the land of his fathers that there is going to be somebody that is far more dangerous to him than Laban ever thought about being, and that is the person of Esau. You know, Laban had vowed to deceive the guy, but it was Esau who had vowed to kill him. He knew this meeting was going to be, and it is a blessing right here that Abraham and Isaac were nowhere to be found because they weren't around, but it's a blessing that they weren't to pick him up. He was on his own. Parents, allow your children, allow your youth, allow your young adults to come to the place that they must have a meeting with their own Esau. You know, we see that Jacob, he looks back. He spends a few moments of time thinking back over his life. And he from where he's at, he can almost see the place that he had made that vow. That Elohim, if you will take me from here, if you will guide me, if you will give me clothes on my back and food to eat, when I get back here, I'm going to serve you. Well, he acknowledges that vow was still there. And he also acknowledges how great of a blessing he has walked in. He says, now I have become two camps. He acknowledges all of the children, the donkeys, the flocks, and everything. And I can guarantee you that in the back of his mind, he is looking out at those flocks and he's saying, now, 1 out of 10, that's the increase. My vow was to give a tenth of everything that the Father would increase me in. My vow is to give a tenth back to him as soon as I get into the promised land. He had not forgotten that vow, nor would he be slack on that vow when he enters into the promised land. So, here we see this man as he is making this vow, and he is reminding the Father. It's kind of funny in a way. He's reminding the Father of, hey, God, you know, you said all these things to me, and, you know, if I come up a little bit short, and my brother Jacob, or my brother Esau, if he kills me, you know, in the next couple of days, well, how's it going to look for you, buddy, is kind of what we can see in the midst of this. And so he sends his flocks and his family and everything across the shore. And he's really been ridiculed as being the coward here because he stayed behind on the opposite shore. I don't quite see it that way. because what I see is he had to, at some time in life, separate himself from his possessions in order to have some time, just him and the Father. You know, it just had to be. He had to rid himself of all of the distractions that had been in his life. He had to have some time alone. That's the way I see it. The reason that he stayed behind is because he needed some time to just deal with the person, Jacob. He needed to not have the distractions of the two wives and the two slave girls and all the children running around. He needed that away from him. He needed the silence of an evening. You know, that speaks really, really loud to me, that all of us, from time to time, we need the silence of an evening to get away. Not to, you know, there's this thing about, well, we need to get away from it all. And people get away from it all and end up running right back into it, you know. People will say, well, I need to get away from everything. And so what do? Go to Las Vegas or go to Hollywood or go to Miami or something like that. What are you doing? All you're doing is running away from the problems, not wanting to confront the problems. I see that Jacob right here, when he says, okay, everybody on the other side, I've got to stay here by myself for a while. What he was doing is he was saying, there is some things left I need to think through. And it was in that time that we see this famous wrestling match with a man. And I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but in the end, we see that he was actually wrestling with the Almighty himself. Now, I've read the commentaries, so have you. I've heard the sermons on it, and I've, all these different things that have been said. I think that there's some things about this meeting that the best teachers on planet Earth have not even scratched the surface when it comes to the meeting here between Jacob and the Almighty. The part that I do want to bring out about it, though, is this, that it's in this meeting that Jacob receives a new name. Now, who can give a new name? The Almighty himself. It says that in the book of Revelation about a new name. But right here, he says, Jacob, you're no longer going to be referred to as Jacob. You've won the battle. You've done well. You've fought the good fight through this. And Jacob, because of that, I'm going to change your name to Israel. Understand, it was through a time of tribulation. It was more than 7 years. It was more than 3.5 years. It was over 14 years. But it was through a time of tribulation that Jacob would be formed into the person that would be called Israel. Now, talk about prophetic. There's not a whole lot more simple than the prophecy that was just said in that. That today, and I said this to Al on the GLC program a few weeks ago, is that today we as a body look a whole lot more like Jacob than we do Israel. There's over 23,000, the last time I heard a few years ago, there's over 23,000 denominations on planet Earth. And then you talk about the Messianics and the Hebrew roots and all these different groups that are splintered out of that. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of denominations. And of course, the one that you're a part of is right. The one I'm a part of is right. No. Do you understand? Do we understand this? That the Almighty only has one denomination? And that denomination is called Israel? Go to Ephesians chapter 2, Romans chapter 11, and you will find that it is a family called Israel. Now, we are grafted in and adopted through the person of Yeshua, But that doesn't negate the fact, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday, that it is said, Paul talked about the body. Now, this is a little bit off the subject here, but I think it's still in the same track. Paul talked about the body, and the body has a head, and the head of the body is Yeshua. Is that not the writings of Shaul? Of course it is. Now, the body also has a name, and the name is Israel. The family's name is Israel, and we are brought into that family. This is not, I mean, this is the basis of the gospel here. This is the as plain as it gets, that we are brought into a family called Israel through the person and work of the Messiah, Yeshua, and he is the head of this family. He is the patriarch that is over all of us. Okay, we need to get back into this. Now, so we see a change in the man, but the man is still a man. He's not perfect. He has been strengthened by his meeting with Esau. You know, you can call it a little bit of a wimpy way out, but the thing is, he got out of it, okay? It's not always it's not always wisdom to stand up in the midst of your enemies and just challenge them down, you know? I mean, Jacob could have looked at Esau and said, "Hey, you stupid idiot, you that sold your birthright to me, I didn't," you know, he could have challenged him in all of those things. Jacob's just wanting to get out of the situation here, right? He's wanting to remove himself and his possessions and his family from the midst of the situation. I see that as quite a bit of wisdom there. I don't have any problem with the way that he did this thing. I mean, he could have stood up and challenged him, but, you know, what if you and I had been in the situation? What would we have done? You pulled it, you know, pulled out your knife on Esau in the middle of the thing and caused a whole war between everybody. Well, maybe Jacob did the right thing. Maybe being part of Israel, maybe having the wisdom that has taken him from being Jacob to being Israel has given him a wisdom of when to fight and when not to fight. Now, on the other hand, you know, these people, and let's don't start pointing the fingers, you know, but these people, their lives are given to us as an example so that we can learn some things, are they not? That's what Romans says. That's what Corinthians says. And we see in the next chapter this almost, this account in chapter 34 has been one that's just like in the midst of all that's going on, you want to look at this and go, what? What in the world is going on here? And it is the daughter of Leah, Dinah, who this guy, Shechem, decides that, you know, he's kind of liking her. And so he comes to Jacob and he wants to leave some big dowry. And it looks like Jacob's kind of in for it, you know? I don't understand that one a lot. I don't think anybody really does. There are just so many things that are going behind the scenes. Well, you know, it appears that maybe Jacob is thinking this thing through. You know, he's still not quite the perfect man. And that gives us some hope, does it not? That though he may have changed our name, though we may be born again, though we may be acknowledging him as everything in our life, it doesn't mean that we have been perfected until we see his face and he is upon this earth. On that day, we will be perfected. Until then, we're all kind of trying to work some things out. And we see this in Jacob, and we see an insight into his life that to me is one that is very convicting. We need to be looking at what's going on because, you know, Simeon and Levi, they kind of walk into this thing And they see that their father's not doing anything about it. Jacob is not wanting to, he's not wanting to confront this situation. That is a problem that Jacob has had, you know, really all of his life. He's been running, and still to this day, he's not facing things at the place that maybe he should. And so when his daughter is raped, he's trying to, you know, let's make a deal. I don't understand that one. That one bothers me. And I kind of side with Simeon and Levi. Now, it's evident that maybe they did the right thing at the wrong time. But, you know, you got to kind of stand behind them and give them a little pat on the back for taking care of this situation, because Jacob's not dealing with it. These boys end up dealing with it. And this guy, Shechem, you know, let's have everybody circumcised. I don't know. This whole kingdom must have loved this guy, because they're all circumcised. And then Simeon and Levi, they come in and they take care of the situation. And instead, this is the one that gets me. Instead of Jacob looking at his boys and saying, "Go, guys. Hey, you know, you stepped up to the plate. You did what I refused to do." Instead, in chapter 34, verse 30, it says, "But Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, 'You have caused me trouble by making me stink in the opinion of the local inhabitants.'" So what? I just want to insert this, and this is one of the questions for the ages that I want to just look at it and go, well, who cares? Since I don't have many people, they'll align themselves together against me and attack me, and I will be destroyed, I and my household. Jacob, do you remember just back a few days ago to Esau? Do you remember what happened to Esau? Do you remember what happened to Laban? Do you remember all of these things that have happened? Jacob, wake up, buddy. I guess instead of yelling at him, we need to see that there's still that same aspect that comes out, I'd have to say, in my own life way too many times. I can't speak for you. I can speak for myself. That even though you go through some of the greatest victories in life, I find myself sometimes on the other side of that victory having doubt. And I hate it. I can't stand that. I haven't figured out exactly, except for a renewed body, you know, how to deal with all those things. And I think probably, I'm speaking to you too, that you see the same thing at times that is happening in your life. And we come through these victories, and then on the other side of the victory, instead of continuing on, we somehow kind of slack back a little bit. And we see these words in verse 31, that Simeon and Levi replied, "Should we let our sister be treated like a whore?" And the chapter comes to an end right there. This bothers me. This bothers me that the chapter comes to an end. You know, we pick it back up in chapter 35 of Jacob said, "Hey, get up, let's get going to Beit El and live there and make an altar to Elohim who appeared to you when you fled Esau, your brother." You know, okay, this is what the father says to Jacob. Who knows what's going on here? What bothers me so much is that Jacob never gives a response to these two boys. And maybe in his indecision, maybe in his lack of response, we finally see, we don't know what the time frame was between the end of chapter 34 and the beginning of chapter 35. We don't see that time frame. We're not privy to that time frame. And maybe he just sat there pondering for this thing so long, and the father finally says, Elohim says, "Jacob, enough, all right? Let's put this behind us and let's move on. It's time for you to move on. Do not allow a distraction like this, Jacob. Do not allow a failure like this to keep you from entering into everything that I am speaking to you. Just speculation again. I'm kind of speaking between the lines. But between the lines, in the white of the pages, is where many times it starts to be that mirror of the scripture starts to look back at us and start speaking way too loud at times, does it not? Now in chapter 35, again, the Almighty says, get up, go to Bethel and live there and make an altar and to God who appeared to you when you fled Esau, your brother. Then, and here's another one. Then Yaakov said to his household and to all the others with him, get rid of the foreign gods that you have with you. Purify yourselves and put on fresh clothes. False gods. Where'd that come from? Wait a minute. They're not supposed to have any false gods, are they? I mean, they've been out here with Jacob all along in the wilderness. They got an inspection from Laban, you know, a little earlier along the journey here, and Laban couldn't find any false gods, but yet Jacob says, everybody, put away your false gods. This can only be understood in light of what happened a few verses from here, because see, Rachel's pregnant, and she's pregnant with a boy that is going to be very, very prophetic in telling, giving us an insight into the situation. Now, if you've been following this Torah video for a few years, what I'm going to say to you is going to be a repeat, but we have a lot of new people here. And besides that, you know, sometimes you miss a week. And so I'm going to repeat it because as I see the Torah repeats itself way over and over and over again. So I'm going to bring this out again. Rachel's nurse has died. She goes into labor, and this is, the scripture says, it's a difficult labor. You can read this in chapter 35, starting in verse 16. Read it for yourself. It says, it is a difficult labor. And Benjamin, who I go into further in the teaching on the 12 tribes, it's available from the website, Benjamin literally rips his mother apart. Benjamin is known as the ravenous wolf in the early part of his life. That's the scriptures we'll read at the end of Genesis and also in Deuteronomy. He is a ravenous wolf to the point that he actually, he struggled. It is said that in that day, in childbirth, when something like this happened, that both the child and the mother would die. Well, Benjamin, he held out for his own here. And so he is named by his mother, son of my grief. Now, if you go into these words of Ben-Oni, they can also mean son of my false gods. Now, this starts to make more sense. Now, Jacob will, in the end, he will rename the boy Benjamin, son of my right hand, son of the south. Some have even translated that son of my comfort. But he, in fact, in Benjamin will be the only one that Jacob has named. All the others were named by their mothers. This one, this boy is named by his father. So in this, if this is true, and I think it is, it bears out that Rachel is given an opportunity to repent for the false gods. And we talked about that last week a little bit more. She is given an opportunity when Laban comes. She could have said, hey, Jacob, I'm sorry. You know, this is what I have. I took it. I knew I shouldn't. I need to get rid of these. Through all this time, though, she hasn't done that. And I believe that seeing the scriptures and what Jacob said right here at the beginning, Jacob knew that she had them. That love that he had for the outward appearance of Rachel was blinding him to the person that she was on the inside. And that he knew all along that she was that she had those false gods. He was trying to get her to come clean. Why he didn't go to her specifically, I don't know. I don't want to point fingers at her more than I am right now. I don't want to degrade her more than I am. I don't want to be condemning her more than I am. But I see some things in the lives of these two individuals, specifically in Rachel, that causes us to take notice that she had continually lived this life of mixture and that Jacob knew about it. But maybe because of his love for her, his attraction to her, or a number of other things about her that we see kind of revealed in her dealings with Leah, we see her as a pretty manipulating young lady, do we not? And maybe that manipulation was not just to Leah. Maybe that manipulation was over into her relationship with Jacob, to the point that Jacob was not strong enough to go and confront his wife. Wow. I mean, there's a lot to that, is there not? Think through it. But it comes down to this. In the end, she was given two opportunities to repent, and she doesn't. And because of that, she dies before they go into the promised land through giving birth to a young boy, a child whose name is Benjamin. He could be nicknamed BB. That's an interesting spin on it, is it not? That the last child born before they entered the promised land was a child named Benjamin. And today, a prime minister sits in the Knesset in Israel whose name is Benjamin Netanyahu. His nickname, which has stuck with him all through life. In fact, Bibi Netanyahu is the first prime minister to hold that office as someone who had been born since 1948, since the state of Israel had been established. Bibi Netanyahu was born in 1949, and he is a citizen of the land of Israel. Now, I just find that very intriguing. I'm not sure what it all means, but I know that nothing is just thrown into Scripture. And so the last one right here, the last child before Israel enters into the promised land, the last child to come forth is Benjamin. And in Israel, we have a prime minister whose name is Bibi. I don't believe Bibi is the Messiah, by the way. I'm just saying it's an interesting prophecy. All right, so back to the account here. In that we see that she dies before she enters into the promised land because she refused to give up her false idols, her false gods. Now, folks, I'm going to say something very, very direct here. I believe that in the Messianic movement, the Christian, Torah restoration, Hebraic roots, whatever you want to call yourself today, doesn't make a bit of difference what you call yourself is as far as what I'm about to say. There are people that are watching me right now. There are people that are listening to me right now that before Israel enters into the promised land, you will die. The reason is because you refuse to give up your false gods. Who am I talking to? I'm not talking to anybody in specific. I just pray that I'm not one of them that I just spoke of. There are going to be people that stand on the edge of entering into the fullness, the promises, the promised land, and you're not going to be allowed to walk in because You cannot take your false gods with you. What is a false god? Is it these little things, you know? There's a little piece of wood or a statue or a, you know, Tigger coffee cup over there. You know, Tigger's way too far from me today. But what is it? Let me give you a definition of a false god. A false god is anything that you turn to except for Yahweh, or anything you turn to while you're turning to Him. That's an interesting concept there. If there's anything in life that in time of difficulty, struggle, of any situation, if there's anything you turn to instead of Him, that's an idol. That's a false god. You know, there are people out there that instead of dealing with, and I'm going to go back to the old thing of pharmakeia, you know, the what the Revelation talks about that we talked about in the last Torah cycle when we went through there. And I'm not saying that all medicine is wrong, okay? But what I'm saying is this, there are people out there, maybe I'm talking to you, that instead of turning to prayer, the first thing you do is turn to a pill. Instead of turning to Him, the first thing you turn to is entertainment. Instead of turning to Him, the first thing you turn to is your credit card. Instead of turning to Him, the first thing you turn to is you fill in the blank. Okay? You know, there's nothing wrong with entertainment. There's nothing inherently wrong, I don't think, in using maybe a checkbook, you know, a credit card, as long as they don't control you. But it's when these things take His place, that's when it is wrong. I'm going to have to leave that with you, of what is it in life. Now, in the process of that, we're going to go over to Joshua. And we're not going to spend a lot of time in Joshua this week, but we are going to bring out the end of Joshua. Because, again, this incredible parallel that happens, that is happening to us as we're going through this year, through the Torah and Joshua through Kings, the parallels, I don't know about you, but I have seen them all over the place. And Joshua, right before, he's about to die. And he gives, just like it says that in chapter 23, that Joshua was old, age was taking its toll. And so he gathered everybody together. He does exactly what Moses had done. It just didn't take him quite as many verses. You know, Moses gave the whole book of Deuteronomy. Joshua just gives, you know, a couple of chapters here. But he's not quite as long-winded. But what does he talk to them about? In verse 8, therefore, be firm about keeping and doing everything written in the Torah of Moses, not turning aside from it to the right or to the left. Then you won't become like those nations remaining among you. Don't even mention the name of their gods. That is a principle, a commandment of Torah. When we talk about the false god of Islam, I do not say the name of that false god. Why? Because we are told in the scriptures not to even pronounce those names. Take them away. Don't even pronounce them. And then it goes on, and he gives the instructions to these, to the children of Israel standing there. And then he says the infamous words, at the end of chapter 24, verse 14, therefore, fear Yahweh and serve Him truly and sincerely. Put away the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt and serve Yahweh. If it seems bad to you to serve Yahweh, then choose today whom you are going to serve. Will it be the gods of your ancestors served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorite in whose land you are living? As for me and my household, we will serve Yahweh. These words are similar in nature to the words that Jacob was trying to get forth when he was saying to the people, put away the false gods. He didn't confront Rachel specifically. I guess maybe he just didn't have the strength within himself to do it. But in the end, Rachel dies. Joshua took it to a new level, folks. Joshua took this thing to a level and he said, as for me and my house, we are going to serve Yahweh. And I'm using the name, the holiest name that he has on purpose right here. Not flippantly. But we must be people who make the decision to walk like Joshua. It is now the month of December of 2009, if you haven't noticed. The pagan holiday is upon us in full swing. Black Friday is gone. Black Monday is gone. But we still have the blackest month on planet Earth, I believe, in this time of this pagan holiday in which we people will bow down and serve the false gods of our ancestors. People will serve the false gods of a tree. All you have to do is go over to Jeremiah chapter 10 and read about the tree. Well, I don't bow down to that thing. How do you get your presence in? People do bow down to it. During this time of December, folks, as I've mentioned, it's a difficult time for all of us. It's a time that we just kind of wish would go away. I plan to observe the time of Hanukkah right in the midst of it and in their face if I need to. Not sure exactly how I'm going to do it fully, but that's my desire. I think that's probably your desire too. That in the midst of this, let us not be of the spirit that it looks like Joshua was still, or that not Joshua, but Jacob was still walking in, that though his name had been changed to Israel, he still had not received the fullness of that inner strength that he needed to confront every situation. Joshua, he did it. Joshua did it. He confronted it. And he said, as for me and my house, youth, if you have a mom or dad that's standing up for their faith in Messiah and observing the Torah, get off their case and instead say thank you. Thank them for the heritage and blessing that they are giving to you today. You don't fully appreciate it right now. There's coming a day very soon that you will. Ladies, if you have a husband that stands for Torah, thank him for it. Be appreciative. Men, if you have a wife that is alongside of you and is helping you and not hindering you, you need to thank her for doing that. Let us have that spirit that Joshua had. And in this month that we are in, may our rally cry be this: as for me and my house, we have chosen to serve Yahweh. Well, Shavuot Tov. Have a wonderful, blessed, prosperous week. Next Friday night begins Hanukkah. Make preparation right now. Don't wait until it's on you. Make preparation, to observe this awesome time. If I can get my voice back there. This awesome time where we remember the people like Joshua that served without compromise to their last dying breath. That's the kind of people that I want to hang out with, is people that have this same spirit that Joshua had. See you next week. Yivarechach Adonai
v'yishmarecha. Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha. Yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom.